Folks, I am really excited to talk about our newest sponsor for the coaching staff, Ruiz Auto Services and Exhaust, also All-American Used Cars and Trucks. Two really, really good businesses. I'm going to start with Ruiz Auto Services and Exhaust. You know, it's hard to find a good mechanic. It's hard to find somebody that you trust. And, you know, long before this situation came about, we had been taking our cars to Ruiz for a year, year and a half, and they've done great, great work. They're honest. They're upfront. They can do everything. They, you know, take care of your motor, take care of your brakes, tires, oil, so simple stuff like oil changes, brake pads, mufflers, whatever you may need. Ruiz Auto Services and Exhaust are going to take care of it for you. If you are in the Omaha area and you are looking for a quality, reasonably priced, customer-friendly situation, you're not going to regret giving Ruiz Auto Services and Exhaust a chance here. They are located at 4839 North 90th Street, Omaha, Nebraska, 68134. You can give Esmeralda a call up there. Her number is 402-317-2572. And they'll get you taken care of. I'm saying this as a customer. We literally do not bring our cars anywhere other than Ruiz Auto Service and Exhaust for anything that we do from this point for the last year or two. So again, another business here, All American Used Cars or Trucks. If you're in the market for a used car or truck, go check out Juan Carlos's business there. 144th and I-80, 14706 Schooner Road here in Omaha. Go check it out here. If you're looking to exchange a car, buy, sell, trade, whatever it may be, you're going to get an honest deal from honest people. So go check out Ruiz Auto Service and Exhaust and All American Used Cars and Trucks. Good afternoon, good evening. My name is Marty Plum, and I am your host of A Pen and a Napkin Podcast, the weekly coaching clinic you can carry around with you in your pocket. Welcome back to the coaching staff, episode number 98. And on the other end of the line is Mr. Green Eggs and Ham himself, Mr. Tony D. Viss, my co-host. Mr. Viss, how are you this fine Wednesday afternoon in the heat wave that is the Midwest in late August of 2024?
Well, first, I always thought I was the fox in socks. But anyway, as we go through the thing, like you said, it has been so hot. I think we've had a heat index the past couple of days of 115. I walked out after school today, 315 or whatever. It's only 87. So yeah. I'm not sure what the heat index is today, but it feels like we've got a nice cool breeze going through. We're supposed to drop another 5 degrees by Friday. So I'm doing well. How are things in Omaha? Are you guys also as hot as the sun?
It was. It's slowly and steadily cooling down. Looking forward to a good Labor Day weekend of good temps. I get to spend Labor Day inside all weekend, though, helping out with USA Basketball Coaching Clinic here in Omaha, the Gold Clinics. And Coach Showalter and Clint Hunter from USA Basketball were kind enough to invite me back. I guess I didn't screw it up too badly last year when I helped out. So
we'll leave no doubt this year.
Yeah, I will leave no doubt that he, Coach Show actually has me speaking to all the campers in four different sessions. So that's pretty much the death nail on my USA Basketball coaching career. After those four speaking engagements, you know, Showalter will be like, you know, thanks for participating. We appreciate you. So, but no, I'm just kidding. I'm really looking forward. It's a great honor to participate and to help young kids out. But it's part of the USA Basketball process, and just to be the tiniest of tiny cogs in the machine to help represent your country, it's a pretty cool thing. And so I'm really excited for it.
Yeah, to be able to have a speaking role, that's going to be quite the honor as well. And then, you know, you go through Show, just does a fantastic job, is really made a ton of progress with USA Basketball. I know he's very proud of the work that he's done and the role that he plays there. So that should be a great experience for everybody.
Yeah, so excited for that. Episode number 98. Tony, I've got two defensive linemen and a basketball player who wore number 98. Very famously wore number 98, but for social issues is the reason why he wore it. We'll see if you get it. The basketball one's going to be tough. One extremely famous footballer, one really good footballer, defensive lineman.
98 defensive linemen.
Well, maybe not. He must have not worn this number. I think I goofed this up, Tony, with the first one, but
that's okay.
Epitomized by the Bears.
Okay. Dan Hampton?
No.
William Refrigerator Perry.
He was 72.
Great. 98 Bears.
The head of the Bears.
Mike Ditka?
Ditka. Okay. Yeah.
He was 98.
Apparently, that's what Google said, and Google's always right. There's never been false information on the internet before.
Oh,
Tony,
never.
You know, never. So, the other one. Okay. Go ahead.
No, the next one. What do we got for the next?
Local product in my area who played for the St. Louis Rams.
98. So obviously came from Nebraska. Ndamukong Suh?
No. Younger.
Okay. Younger than Sue. Nebraska. I don't know if Nebraska's had good football players since Ndamukong Suh.
Well, I meant older. He was before Ndamukong Suh. My fault. My bad.
Okay.
So shots fired, by the way.
Older than Suh from Nebraska.
Slightly older. Glory days. Husker 90s.
Neil Smith?
Nope.
No, because he was the Chiefs. My bad.
One more. Won a Super Bowl.
I'm stumped on Super Bowl with the Rams. Yeah. Probably their best defensive player.
I don't know if he was their best player, but he was important to their defense. Defensive end. Don't got it?
I do not have this one.
Grant Winstrom.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I don't think I would have. I started to think of the linebacker that was a leading tackler, and that wasn't going anywhere.
Yeah. Basketball player would be really tough. Do you have a quick guess on the basketball player? I would say
Rodman, but that would be too late. Yeah. 11, 12 years ago, basketball, no.
No. Jason Collins. Who was the first openly gay teammate as an active player. And he wore that number 98 in honor of Matthew Shepard, the young man who was killed out in Wyoming in a hate crime that happened in the year 1998. So that was the reason why he wore it. So, so there you go. Episode number 98, how to be a respected teammate. Tony, this could go to players, but it could also go to coaches as well. One of the things that I wrote down kind of in bold letters here is we are constantly preaching to our players about being a good teammate and the relationships that they should have with one another and the things that they should do as a good teammate and be a respected teammate. But I guess I'm going to lead off with this one here. How good of a teammate are you as a coach to your fellow coaches within your school, within your system, within your programs? I think that is, I know in my 28 years, my 18 years as a head coach, working with other coaches at times was more difficult than working with my own team and getting my team to get along in some ways, just because of, you know, adults being adults and competitiveness and kid, you know, sharing of kids and all those other things. So I want to start us in that direction, Tony, because I think that's a really important conversation that we can kind of kick this off with where, we focus so much on our players and our leadership role as coaches, but what are we doing? How are we modeling our relationship? And Lord knows, Tony, I made mistakes. I'll be the first one to admit, but I always genuinely tried to think of the other coaches on the staffs that I was on before I made any major decisions within my program. That's where I'd kind of like to start it at, Tony. You got anything with that?
Yeah, I mean, you go through, and like you said, we kind of, you know, talk to our players about how to treat each other and to be a part of a bigger unit and kind of sacrifice the ego and different things like that. But are we also walking the walk and not just talking the talk? And so that can definitely be a challenge. And as part of a coaching staff, you know, at your school where there's, you know, 10 plus different sports and other things and sharing kids with fine arts and so on and so forth, you know, you have to model that in your own life as well. And so, yeah, that'll be something that could be an interesting road to go down.
Yeah. What were some things that you thought, you know, let's go back to your head coaching days, Tony. What are some things that you think, you know, two or three things that I think I did really, really well as a head coach, as, you know, as far as being a respected teammate and working well with my other coaches, other head coaches, and maybe some things that, yeah, you know what, what's one or two things maybe you feel like you could have done better?
Okay. One of the things that I oftentimes tried to do was to make sure that I partnered up with the other coaches that ran summer programs, mm-hmm. to make sure that we had things like, hey, this is a big, you know, team camp weekend for us. It'd be nice if we had everybody, and to make sure that we didn't put the kids in a situation where we took half to a basketball team camp, half to a volleyball or whatever the case may be. That's something that I felt that was important to do. And so I would sit down with those who ran, you know, pretty ambitious summer programs to make sure that the kids were shared.
I did that as well, you know, and especially at the smaller school, the last 4 years at Fort Calhoun, we would sit down and we would kind of map it out. And you know, I like to think in that same vein, I think I did a pretty good job giving and taking. Like, as an example, what I told our softball and volleyball coaches is, hey, I would really like to have that first week of the summer kind of exclusively to basketball so that we could just do our team camps and just kind of get that kicked off there. Because in Nebraska anyway, June is the busiest. June's much busier for the high school coaches than it is July. So, and we can't start until the Tuesday after Memorial Day. So could I have that week there? And then the last week of the summer, as you are ramping up in Nebraska, we have softball in the fall as well. We don't play it in the summer. School-sanctioned, state-sanctioned softball is in the fall here in Nebraska. So softball, volleyball, that last week of the summer, we will do nothing with basketball so that you can really ramp up heading into your preseason practices, which will then, of course, lead into your competitions. And so I'd like to think, you know, that was just as an example, some of the things that I would try to do as a give and take to, you know, fit our calendar, fit their calendar. Everybody wins in the end. It simplifies things for the kids, that type of stuff. You know, I think another thing I'd like to think I did a pretty good job of was supporting other people's activities and being a good teammate in that regard. You know, going to the volleyball games, going to the softball games, soccer matches, even outside of that, you know, often we don't see it because we're involved in athletics, but you know what? And I really learned this from my kids' experiences. You know, that mock trial coach is putting in good time as well. And they're coaching their kids up much in the same way that we are in the basketball in the gymnasium. One act play, show choir, all of those different type of activities, forensic speech, you know, that type of stuff. They're coaching them up, and I encourage coaches, if you want to, you know, really do that, one of the best compliments I felt like I've ever gotten, one of the things I'm really proud of is at one point, one of our fine arts teachers came up to me and said, hey, I really, really want to thank you for coming to multiple productions over the years. You are literally the only athletic coach that comes to our productions. And our kids notice that, and I really, really appreciate that. And for me, that was like, okay, I'm doing something right, at least in this way here. So that's another thing I think you can do to be a great teammate as a coach, to show your kids that, you know, this is how you be a great teammate. This is how I'm modeling being a great teammate as well.
I would say similar. You know, I would go to a handful of volleyball games. I made it to a number of football games. But yeah, a lot of times I would go and catch, you know, we always talk about, you know, multiple sport athletes and, you know, putting a priority on them and stuff like that. And I think, you know, like we've talked about on here before, as a coach, you know, if you emphasize that, one of the things important for you to do is to get out there and to watch them in those, whether it's soccer or baseball or softball or whatever the case may be. That's great. I think the kids really appreciate that. And so, yeah, I think that's being a good teammate, because I think we like when, you know, those coaches come in and support us. And so if we're going to do that, we're going to want to make sure that we also mm-hmm. pay it back that way as well. And so I thought that would be one. I would also say I think I did a pretty good job on that one as well.
What's one thing maybe you wish you would have done better as a head coach, being a teammate with your other head coaches, Tony?
You know, the one thing that we were talking about, you know, we just mentioned a little bit ago about the whole deal as far as those coaches that you work with in the summer. But Iowa has kind of a unique thing where we play our softball and baseball in the summer. And I don't know if I've always been good in terms of scheduling around that, mm-hmm. you know, when their practices are, when we're working out, when their games are, when our league is and stuff like that. And that's probably one that I could have been better with that sport in their season. And maybe not being as expecting those kids to be in as often as maybe I do.
Mm-hmm. I think that's the thing that we all struggle with as head coaches, and that would be at the top of my list, just working on the sharing of athletes. I really felt like, and whoever worked with me may have a different opinion, but I felt like I tried really hard to, you know, okay, what do you need from me, and maybe I can work my stuff around yours. And you know, there were some folks that were really easy to work with. There were others that did not care, and they were just going to do whatever the heck they wanted to do. And so it was that fine line of, man, you know, you have to be selfish to a large degree with your program, and to demand that time in the gym, those open gyms, those camps. But you don't want to, you know, I was always torn with putting the kids in a tough situation, you know. Mm-hmm. And so I would have, you know, maybe to the detriment of the program, definitely, especially when I was younger, I think I actually got a little more hardened, a little bit more stubborn about this as I got older, where I'm like, no, you're not going to take advantage of my time. We're going to get this worked out here. We're going to do this like this. I remember one time where another sport wanted to have their high school team camp at the same week that we had always had our basketball camp, which was that first week of the summer. And I'm like, we got a bunch of kids that we're sharing here. They're going to go 3 hours with you in the morning, and then they're going to go 3 hours with me in the afternoon. In a day and a half, they're going to be cooked. Oh, they'll be fine. No, they were done. They were done after a day and a half. And my mm-hmm. camp suffered the rest of the week. It really angered me. It really, really frustrated me. And I, you know, that was kind of one of those things where it's like, okay, if you're going to be like that, it's harder for me to be a good teammate to you when I told you this is what I really believe is going to happen. This is a bad idea, and you go ahead and do it anyway. You know, that those are the situations that makes it hard.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, and then, you know, another thing that you were touching on, you mentioned how you had gone to a lot of fine art stuff, and I've done a few plays here and there. But I probably could have done better in some of those fine art things and supporting, you know, those that way as far as the whole extracurricular gambit, rather than just focusing maybe so much on the athletic side of things.
Well, Tony, with all your time in your boy band in the early 90s, you probably just would have drawn too much attention to yourself.
Well, I didn't want to make anybody feel bad that I was in there with my skills and everything. So, yeah.
It's understandable. It's understandable. In 1993... Counting Crows referred to Omaha as somewhere in Middle America. More people know Omaha as the home of Warren Buffett, the Union Pacific Railroad, and the College World Series. Athletically, Nebraska is known for its dominance in college and high school football and volleyball, while basketball has perennially been on the back burner. But for one season, in its largest city, basketball was king of the state. In a time of social and political turmoil in our country, three high school boys basketball teams from Omaha, Nebraska were ranked in the top 25 in the country, featuring some of the best talent that one city has ever produced anywhere in the country. Amongst these three teams were 9 Division I basketball players, and all 15 starters from these three teams played collegiate athletics at various levels for at least 2 seasons. Kings of their court, 3 teams, one city, and the greatest basketball season in Nebraska high school history begins with the chaotic ending of the 2020 state tournament as the whole world was shutting down due to the COVID-19 virus. Over the span of the next year, these players, coaches, and parents navigated their basketball futures while also, like the rest of the United States and the world, worked through COVID quarantines, the George Floyd murders and riots, the political turmoil of the 2020 presidential campaign, and much more. 1 year later, the destinies of these three teams would intertwine themselves for the final time at the 2021 Nebraska State Basketball Tournament, where the crescendo to this story occurred 365 days after it began, with some of the best high school basketball any state has ever seen. Kings of their court, 3 teams, one city, and the greatest basketball season in Nebraska high school history is the story of highly driven individuals searching to achieve lifelong dreams and aspirations, both on and off the basketball floor, during a season that almost didn't happen. Kings of their court will be published on October the 1st, Tuesday, October the 1st. Kindle copies are $9.99. Paperback copies are $19.99. Copies are eligible to be pre-ordered today, so be sure to get on Amazon.com and pre-order your copy of Kings of Their Court. Let's talk about our players, Tony. Let's talk about our kids and some of the other things. You know, just helping your kids how to respect each other as teammates. I've got 5 or 6 bullet points here. Go ahead and lead the way here, though, Tony. I'll let you serve, and I'll try to volley back here.
Perfect. So as we go through and take a look at it, I think the number one thing that pretty much anybody can control, and one of the easier things, would be to be on time. I think that's probably one of the bigger things, you know, where your time's not more valuable than anybody else's, whether it's being on time to practice, being on time for the bus, you know, just making sure, because I think it's just a respect thing. And I know sometimes people get caught up in, you know, what's the big deal? I'm just a couple minutes late, and it's a respect thing. And, you know, I think that's the big thing is respect other people, respect time. You know, I always tell kids, you know, I'm going to hold you accountable on being on time. And I want you in turn to hold me accountable to get you out of here on time.
Mm-hmm. I kind of had, you know, really closely related to that, Tony. You know, basically just the golden rule. Do unto others as though you want done unto you. That's kind of the first thing I wrote down. That is the first thing I wrote down. And being on time is one of those things. If something was really important to you, and if you said, hey, we're going to start blank at 7 o'clock, you would want everybody there by 7 o'clock, if not a little bit sooner. So why is it okay for you to show up when, you know, if pre-practice starts at 3:15 and practice starts at 3:30, why is it okay for you to just kind of stroll in at 3:18 or 3:19? You know, it's important to me, and you know, time is the one thing that we all have that is equal to everybody. We can all use time the same way, and it's also something we can never get back. It's the one thing in this world we can never get back. And like you said, Tony, it's a sign of disrespect when you are constantly late, when you are making people wait on you. You're basically saying, my time is more important than you. And I've said that to my players for years and years and years, so I wholeheartedly agree with you there. I think it's important that you try to sell that the best teams, truly the best teams, have a genuine love and care for one another. And that, if possible, you try to nurture that. It's really hard to do. It's really, and the bigger the team, the harder it is to have that genuine love and care. But in my 28 years, Tony, in your 30 plus 48. Years, is it 48, 92,
no, I'm just...
106, how many years have you coached?
Oh, let's see.
I don't think I've ever actually asked you that question, because you started out at the little school, the academy.
Walnut Ridge, yeah. Walnut Ridge. And I mean, we've all had those things in terms of, like, my student teaching.
Yeah.
I got a coach, which was fantastic. I had a great experience doing that. It's been 30-plus years, yeah. Because I started before I graduated college, and then, you know, now I'm 30 plus years into it. I think 31, 32, something like that.
Yeah. So you not necessarily your best teams, but the teams that you enjoyed the most, your players had a genuine love and care for each other pretty much mm-hmm. through and through the roster. And I think if you can sell that, and more than likely, Tony, regardless of the talent of that team, it probably overachieved because those players truly loved and cared for each other. I don't know if that was your experience, but my guess would be that's what happened.
Well, it usually is. I mean, I think that when the teams truly care for each other, you know, record-wise, not that you throw the record out, but it's almost like it doesn't really matter that much because it's so enjoyable to be around. Sometimes you get around those teams that are super, super talented, but the chemistry and how they get along is crap. And those years sometimes are more trying than those years you go a little bit over 500, but the kids loved each other and sacrificed.
Yeah, yep, absolutely. So what else you got, buddy?
You know, one of the things that we talk a lot about with our kids is the fact you can control two things. You can control your attitude and you can control your effort. And to make sure that you have a good effort and that you have a great attitude. And if you do those things, you know, results will take care of themselves. But that's something too, because, you know, like you mentioned earlier, as far as like time, it's one thing everybody has. And these are two things you can control. And if your attitude and effort are in the right spot, like I said, the results, the enjoyment, the wins and losses, whatever, will take care of itself. And so that's something that we really emphasize a lot. To be a good teammate, those are things that have to be a high priority.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, one of the things that I had was giving yourself up for the good of the team, selling that, roles, different things like that. You know, be a star in your role. As I used to say, you know accept, embrace, and excel at your role. And when you have a collective group of kids that are going to recognize those little catchphrases, those sayings, those cliches, and they truly live it, they're going to respect each other. They're really going to respect, or you would hope that they would. And for you, you know, for your players, I really think that they've got to respect their role. They've got to embrace, and if they really respect their role that they're being asked to do, whether they agree with their role or not, I truly believe that their teammates will then respect them and care for them even more so than they did before. You know, that to me is just a huge part of it, that you know, just selling that, just being, hey, I've been asked to do this. It might not be exactly what I want to do, but I'm going to be great at it, or whatever the scenario may be. But just how can you, if you are truly giving yourself up for the team, your teammates are really, really going to respect you for that.
No doubt about it. Whether that's setting a good screen, talking on defense, blocking out every time. You know, if you can do those things and you bring kind of that hard hat and lunch pail to work, to practice each day, I think it's just something that kids respect you tremendously on because they admire what you're doing. It, like you said, it might not be the role that you desire. You might not be the star, the leading scorer, or whatever. But it is a role, the dirty work that nobody else really isn't the glamour thing that people sign up to do. But if you're willing to do it, it earns the respect of your teammates.
Mm-hmm. Yep. What else you got, buddy?
Encouragement. I think if you can encourage your teammates, you know, one of the things that's so very, very powerful is the fact that you kind of flock to people that are positive, that encourage. Yeah. And if you have a team that's full of encouragers, I remember, you know, I talked about Steve Nash, hundreds of high fives every game, yep. You know, and that encouragement goes such a long way. And I remember reading a story about ducks and why they fly in a V formation and how they honk, and that provides encouragement, and they are able to go, I think it's like 70% further or something like that because of it. You know, encouragement just lifts you up. And it's one of those things that I think so very, very important. It's really refreshing in the world that we live in because it seems like we have a lot of people that have that you know, dark cloud over their head, the doom and the gloom, and that breath of fresh air with encouragement, you know, is so, so key.
Yeah. What's the character from Peanuts that has the cloud over his, maybe I'm thinking of Pigpen. Yeah. Well, he's just dirty all the time, but isn't there, yeah. Is it Peanuts or is it some other cartoon where they got somebody's just walk around, there's a cloud over their head and, you know,
I always think they Eeyore off Winnie the Pooh.
Yeah. Well, yeah, we can use Eeyore, you know? Yeah. I mean, just nobody wants to be around an energy vampire. Nobody in their heart of hearts truly respects an energy vampire. Right, Tony?
No. I mean, it's so easy to complain. And, you know, we can all sit there and throw rocks and live in a glass house. But, you know, I'd rather be a part of the solution rather than the problem.
Yeah. I shameless plug for the opening tip Substack newsletter. But we talked about myself, Coach Kern, and Coach Wall. We talked a lot about enthusiasm. That was our wooden topic for this week. And that definitely came up, was energy vampires, how you present yourself to people, you know, those type of things. So now the only way you can listen to that podcast is by subscribing. So check it out. Go get that taken care of. But there's a huge part of that, Tony, that positivity, that enthusiasm. And when you bring that, when you have that player that you're coaching that is a negative person, you have to sit down and have those conversations with them and say, hey, you know, if you want to be, I know you want to be respected. This is the way I always kind of led those conversations. I know you want to have this, or I know you want to be this, but because you're doing this and this, you're kind of falling short of what you would like to have. And so how can we fix that? What are some things that we can do to fix that? And that's the way I tried to handle those conversations when they would come about. And, you know, unfortunately, probably about once or twice a season, you would usually have to have those conversations. When you didn't have to have those conversations, guess what? You're probably having a pretty good year.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. So another thing that I had written down, Tony, this is, you know, kind of put this bug in your player's ear, put it in your own ear. How can I make other people's jobs easier today? Start your day with that. When you're going to work, when you're going to practice, when you're going to the office, whatever it may be, how can I make other people's jobs easier today? You're being a great teammate when you're thinking of your others rather than you're thinking of yourself. You kind of have that servant leadership attitude of what can I do to make life and other people's jobs easier for them than for me. And when you do that, you garner instant respect from those around you, your peers around you.
100%. You know, and when you take a look at making people's lives easier, if that's every time, I'm so glad so-and-so's here. They make things work better. I think that's such a key characteristic, because a lot of times people strive to be the best. But if you're striving to make those around you the best, that's where you have so much more of an impact from that standpoint.
Mm-hmm. Yep. I've got one or two more, Tony. How many you got?
Same boat here. Okay. My next one was to be committed, to buy in. You know, and as we take a look at things, you know, when you're in the season, it's super, super important to be committed. Like outside of the season, you might be a multiple sport person. You might be somebody who dabbles in the fine arts, whatever. And so you might not be there all the time as often, but when you're in the season, buy in and be committed. And I think that's something that at times, you know, we see people that don't want to do that. You know, it's easy to go halfway. It's easy to dip your toe in. But when you buy in heart and soul, and you know, you lose or whatever, it hurts so much. And I think some people are maybe a little bit scared to be that vulnerable. But I would encourage you to earn the respect of your teammates, buy in wholeheartedly, and be committed.
Mm-hmm. I kind of had something related to that for one of my last two, Tony. Committed and compete. You know, as long as the competition is healthy, you should have healthy competition with the stuff that you do. Life is competitive in so many different ways. And as long as that competition is a healthy competition, but you need to require that healthy competition at all times. For me, and again, maybe as my middle son, our middle son says, you know, maybe I'm going a little alpha here. I have a hard time with non-competitive people, and I might lose to them, but I can respect it. I can respect it. You know, hey, you beat me fair and square. It was healthy competition. That's great. That's fun. Let's do it again. You know, type of a thing. Again, probably kids that I had a hard time coaching were kids that just struggled with just being, you know, and it doesn't need to be maniacal competitive, but just healthy competitive type of a thing, and to be committed to that competitiveness. If you're going to be here, is kind of another way to say that, Tony. And that's, you know, I wholeheartedly agree with you in that regard. You know, you're talking about being committed. Well, be committed and compete while you're here. Just don't show up for 2 hours with the same uniform as us. Really buy in to what we're doing. That's you know, a lot of what you're saying, right, buddy?
Definitely. You know, I think it was Kobe Bryant that said to, you know, raise your standards, you might lose the losers, so to speak. Lower your standards, you're going to lose your winners. And yeah. So I think that's a part of being competitive and being committed and buying into what you're doing.
Yep, absolutely. So the last thing I had, and it's kind of, you know, to a degree, you kind of referenced it already, servant leadership, you know, putting yourself, putting others in front of yourself. And I guess I kind of did say that, you know, how can I make other people's jobs easier on a daily basis? But just being a servant leader. And in coaching, most of us are not making a lot of money doing this. Some of us are not making any money that are doing this. But to be that servant leader, to serve others, to tell your players to be servant leaders. And if you are a servant leader, you're going to earn the respect of your teammates. If you're selfish, if you always have to be the first one that orders when you stop for a meal at a fast food place on a road trip, or, you know, little things like that, you know, people notice that. People notice that without a doubt. And so I just think servant leadership is really, really important in that regard.
No doubt. A leader is one of those people, and I've tried to model this a little bit through the years in terms of when we would do our banquets, I would usually try to be the last one to go through the line. And I know that was kind of counterproductive at times because I might be the first one to speak or whatever the case may be, but I wanted to make sure, you know, to put others' needs ahead. And that's like, you know, sweeping the floor before practice begins. I try to model that as well, just to make sure that servant leadership is something that I find is super important, that you know, just to put others out there and to be willing to serve them. I think that's something that earns people's respect. And then my last one I want to throw out here real quick is to get rid of the excuses and allow yourself to be coached. A lot of times when things don't go our way, we want to start pointing fingers, whether that's at teammates, coaches, you know, whatever, the weather, I don't know. But we have these excuses. I think a lot of times, you know, it's just one of those things, the bottom line is the bottom line. And, you know, you either get the job done or you don't get the job done. Now, are there some legit reasons and excuses? Yeah. But at the same time, you know, don't be super sensitive and allow yourself to be coached. Get rid of the excuses and, you know, hold yourself to that standard. And I think that's something as well, because I know, you know, somebody starts to make an excuse, you get the eye rolls, or here we go again type of thing. And just hold yourself accountable. I think that would be refreshing and different than what maybe some are used to.
Yeah, especially when you have the player or the parent who, you know, it's not my fault, it's somebody else's fault, blah, 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 that type of thing. People, no matter how talented you are, and you may be talented and you may be a key cog in the sense of you score baskets or you hit home runs or you make tackles or whatever you may be, but do your teammates really respect you? No, they don't. They not in any way, shape, or form. And mm-hmm. when it's always somebody else's fault, they don't respect you, in my opinion. I mean, don't you think, buddy?
Yeah, 100%. When it's, you know, it's one of those things about, you know, I've heard the phrase before, when you point fingers, you have three or four pointing right back at you. Mm-hmm. And it's one of the hard things to look in the mirror and understand that sometimes the person who is holding you back is that person that's looking at you in the mirror. And we just got to get rid of those excuses, allow ourselves to be coached. And I think that's something that we'll see growth and development happen when that begins to take place.
Coaches, by now you have seen the newest thing coming out of a pen and a napkin, the Opening Tip Substack newsletter. I put an edition out there for free, and hopefully you see what a great investment this is going to be for you as a coach. I'm guessing it probably is, if you watch everything and listen to everything, it's going to take you almost 3 hours to get through everything on the Opening Tip newsletter here. What do we have in there? You've got an original article by myself here, just thoughts, ideas on different coaching topics. Into the Lab, that's probably my favorite thing, is the Into the Lab. It's me, another coach, and a whiteboard, and we're just drawing stuff up here. Stuff to help you out, to help you become better, and to help your team become better this coming season and beyond. Got another exclusive podcast. You heard the first one, Industriousness, from the Wooden Pyramid of Success, and it's me and it's two semi-retired former girls basketball coaches, Matt Kern of York, Nebraska, Nate Wall of David City Aquinas here in Nebraska. And every newsletter, we're going to break down an aspect of Wooden's Pyramid of Success. Bookshelf recommendations from off the bookshelf, X's and O's stuff. I'm dropping in a university video. It's just going to be given to you there. You know, and I really believe in the products that I've put together. It's practical stuff that's going to help make you a better coach. And then we've got the Coach's Corner with links to clips and articles. As you saw, we had our two Olympic coaches, Steve Kerr and Cheryl Reeve. Just really, really good stuff here. And I know it's subscription-based, but goodness gracious sakes alive, as Coach Wooden would say, it is so affordable. $8 a month for two newsletters. That's $4 every newsletter. That's $2 every single week. Or you can get a year-long subscription, $75. That's 24 editions of the newsletter. That's basically $3 a newsletter. That's basically a dollar an hour if it takes you about 3 hours to get through everything that you're getting here. It could not be more affordable. It could not be more positive for you. It's going to help make you a better coach. So subscribe to the Opening Tip newsletter. Folks, you're not going to regret it. Well, Tony, you know who never makes excuses.
They just make hit records. That would be Europe.
They've been making hit records since the 80s, and they stopped about in the 80s. Yes, it is Europe. It is the final countdown. It is time for a little coaching staff trivia. Tony, it is my turn to throw a question out at you. Tony, are you ready for this week's trivia question?
Sure. I think I might have got one correct recently.
Well, this is on a piece of paper and not on the computer, so I won't screw this up hopefully in the next minute or so. I don't know if you saw last night, Asia Wilson had a 40-point game, 42-point game last night. It is the third time in her WNBA career that she has scored more than 40 points. Only three other players in WNBA history have three or more 40-point games. Who are they?
I'm going to go Cynthia Cooper.
Nope.
That was a good start. Lisa Leslie.
Double bad start.
Holy crap.
That was a good start.
Let's go with Brianna Stewart.
Yes. You're still in the game. You're still in the game. Okay. Two more.
All right.
I'll give you a hint.
Diana Taurasi.
You didn't even need the hint. Do you still want the hint? Because I think it'll help you land the plane. The last two went to the same college. So Diana Taurasi
went to UConn.
Okay.
And another one that her and Stewie both went to UConn. So did all three go to UConn then?
Now that I think about it, yes, they did.
I'm going to go out of left field on this one. Tina Charles.
Like Meatloaf said in 1977, two out of three ain't bad.
Who's the other one?
Maya Moore.
I forgot about her.
Yes. Stewie and Diana Taurasi have had four. Asia and Maya Moore have had three 40-point games. Yeah, so. But not bad, buddy. Not bad. My intention was to say she had a 40-point game. It's the third time. How many other players in WNBA history have had three or more
40-point games. And that's the way I was originally going to say it, but it turned out okay. You had a good run. I mean, and the two that you missed on, I mean, Cynthia Cooper's a great guess. Lisa Leslie is a great guess, but just turned out
USC.
Yep. USC, both USC, right?
Yeah. Both are Trojans.
Both are Trojans. So, all right. Well, hey, you know, it's only about 10 after 5, and I know I'm feeling a little bit hungry. I would be thinking,
I'll make it a run.
This one's a little bit delayed, Tony. Our Arby's winner this week, and kind of also because nobody really signed any new contracts or anything. So, but we failed to mention this when it happened. It happened at the end of July. Who's going to buy us Arby's? It is going to be Adam Silver and the National Basketball Association, Tony. They've got a little bit of change rolling around in their pocket. End of July, they signed an 11-year, $76 billion, starts with a B, $76 billion media rights agreement. That will get you a few baskets of waffle fries from our favorite fast food place.
No doubt about that. You know, the one thing I also thought you might go with, I saw yesterday, and I know they're not basketball guys, but the Kelce brothers signed a $100 million podcast deal. So I think we're up next.
Well, we just need to renegotiate. I mean, you know, now that they're only $50 million behind us, I think it's time we extend our lead in the podcast sweepstakes.
We got to get this podcast dynasty established.
Yes. We could only wish, Tony. We could only wish. And in my dreams, when I'm wishing for things to fall down from the stars, when they come true, this is what I say.
That was a heck of a segue.
Yeah. Mike Greenberg, you ain't got nothing on me. So
Greeny.
Yeah. So, Tony, I had three things. If there's anything else you want to add to our TWIB segment this week, feel free to do so. The aforementioned Maya Moore had her number retired at the University of Connecticut because of her shortened career for very good reasons. Social justice in the form of inmate justice. Her husband was wrongfully accused of a crime that he did not commit. Because of her work, she was able to get him out of prison. She dedicated her life to that cause, retired very early from basketball, now married to him. I think they've got a couple kids together. One of the greats, one of the all-time, maybe if she would have played as long as a Diana Taurasi or some of the other players that we've seen, if she would not have retired, kind of had the Sandy Koufax into her career, her numbers, I believe, would have been very, very difficult to catch. That's my opinion. I think it's a well-deserved honor for Maya Moore. Just a terrific, terrific individual player.
No doubt about that. And the one thing I think that's a bigger compliment for her, she may be the greatest women's winner of all time. If you go through and take a look at, you know, high school state championships, college championships, and then WNBA titles with the Minnesota Lynx, I mean, just an incredible run. Might be the greatest winner from a percentage standpoint of any of the women's players.
I still have this today. It's at work. It's in my, it's behind my desk with my stack of Championship Productions DVDs. So I bought one of those all access, like 8-hour DVD sets from Championship Productions, and it was the UConn like open practice. And and Maya Moore was at UConn at the time. And you know, you would see the thing, and obviously we're not privy to that. Per se, you know, we would just see the UConn games when she was playing. And if you thought she was incredible, and she did things that were amazing on the floor during competitions when she played at UConn, Tony, you should have seen her in these practices. They taped, I don't know, 3 or 4 practices, whatever it was. And it was just breathtaking to watch her work, to watch her play. Just an amazing LeBron James-esque for a women's basketball player would be kind of, and I know that's a heavy name to throw around. I know, but it's, you know, her size, her speed, her athleticism, her skill. She was a 6'1", 6'2", wing player that could beat you off the bounce, could shoot it from three, could pass it, could just do, and just strong, just a strong woman. Just a tremendous, tremendous player. And it is to a degree, again, in the big picture of things, the mission that she's had in her post-playing career has been much more important to society at large. But man, it's kind of like what Phil Jackson said to Michael Jordan when he retired the first time. You're denying the world of your art to a degree, and it's, you know, it's just like, selfishly, man, it would have been great to watch Maya Moore play another 5 to 7 years.
No doubt about it. And to see what type of legacy she would have left behind. I mean, if you take the current Minnesota Lynx roster, because they might be the hottest, the best team in the WNBA right now.
Yep.
And you put a veteran Maya Moore on there, that might be your favorite right now to win the championship this year, and might have fast-forwarded the process the past couple years, having her there with her leadership ability and skills as well.
Mm-hmm. Coaches, if you are in the Omaha, Council Bluffs, Lincoln metropolitan areas and surrounding areas, it is that time of year again. It is time for the 2024 MBCA Fall Coaches Clinic Series. We're going to start this on Wednesday, September 18th. We're going to go 4 weeks in a row, September 18th, 25th, October the 2nd, and October the 9th. And we have got a great lineup of coaches. Drew Johnson, women's basketball coach at Nebraska Kearney. Marty Levinson, new men's basketball coach at Nebraska Kearney. Tim Sandquist, head men's basketball coach at Kirkwood Community College. Carrie Amy, the new women's basketball coach at the University of South Dakota. Mark Swoboda, from my alma mater, Briarcliff University. Go Chargers, head men's basketball coach there. Coach Swoboda is going to be down. Amy Williams, head women's basketball coach at the University of Nebraska, is going to be one of our guests. We've got a couple more slots to fill. So it is going to be a great series of clinics. It's going to be located at Legends Sports Bar here in Omaha, 72nd and Pacific Street, just east of 72nd Street there. And for those four clinics, $80 is going to cover your clinic fees, the beverages, the food, and the camaraderie, the networking, all of those different things you're going to have at the Metro Basketball Coaches Association Coaches Clinics here this fall series. It's going to be a great run of coaches, so I encourage you, get signed up today. If you want to get signed up, if you want more information, you can send an email to Tom Crable at mbcaomaha@gmail.com, and Tom will get back to you. He'll get you all the information that you need. So coaches, get signed up for this fall's run of coaches clinics for the Metro Basketball Coaches Association. Angel Reese, Tony. Angel Reese is on a heater with its you know, Rodman-esque numbers with the rebounding stuff. And again, the running joke is, you know, a lot of those offensive rebounds are off of her own misses. And to a degree, that's criticism. There we go.
There you go.
But however, even if you took away the offensive rebounds that she gets off of her own misses, she would still lead the WNBA in offensive rebounding. Nobody has averaged more than 12 rebounds a game. Nobody has cracked that 12 rebound a game barrier in WNBA history, and she's at over 13 rebounds a game. She's going to shatter that here down the home stretch these last two or three weeks of the regular season. You know, your thoughts on the, and I'm going to use air quotes here, Tony, the streak. You know, how are you gauging Angel Reese's game? Has it progressed? You know, what's her long-term future?
You know, as I take a look at Angel Reese, the things I would go out there, 20 rebounds, 20 plus rebounds, three games in a row is incredible. And like you mentioned, she is getting some criticism, and probably deservedly so to a certain extent, of getting her own missed layups. But at the same time, like you brought up, Marty, even if it's not her own, she's still going to get double digit rebounds. The one thing, because you compared her to Rodman, that she might want to do is to kind of mimic Dennis's game a little bit from this standpoint. Dennis didn't shoot it a whole lot. And if you go through and you take a look, like, she's shooting it 16 times a game in some of these games. And I'm not trying to be mean. You don't want her to shoot, not shoot at all. But if she gets her attempts down to that, you know, 6, 8, 10 range,
yeah,
I think that makes her a more effective player. And then she can just kind of devote herself to defense and rebounding like what Dennis did and you know, see her game take off. But she has improved a ton. I mean, you're talking the 7th overall pick in the WNBA draft. And outside of Caitlin Clark, I don't know of anyone else that's having a better rookie year than her. You know, and so I think she has definitely overachieved. She has made a ton of progress in her long-term future. I could see her making an Olympic team down the road. I really see her growing. And if she can get to where she shoots, you know, 45, 50% from the field, that's only going to make her even more effective.
Yeah, she's, I got it in front of me right now, Tony, 38% from the field. And, you know, she's not shooting really any three-pointers. You know, I probably 1 for 4 for the, you know, whatever. It's not a lot. You know, take 6 to 8 great shots instead of 14 forced shots, you know, type of a thing. And that will come with experience. And they're you know, her and Cardozo, Kennedy Carter is younger. You know, they just got they traded away Marina Mayberry, excuse me. You know, so she's probably shooting more than she was when Mayberry was there. Yeah, you know, I have been impressed with her. I think it will develop. I you know, if she could just get her field goal, like you said, Tony, if she could get her field goal percentage, even just to 45%, let alone up to 50, 52, that would take her to another level here. But she's, if she's going to get that, you know, Olympic call, she does have to start finishing better. You know, average 10 rebounds a game, but shoot 50% from the field, and then we're looking really, really good in that regard.
No doubt about it. And she's a little bit undersized.
Yeah.
You know, and so the more that she expands that offensive game, that'll help. But, you know, if you look at her, she's got some form issues. You know, if she could get to a shooting coach and work on some fundamental stuff, I think that would really help her out.
Yeah, I agree. And she's going to have to expand that range. She's going to have to be able to step out. And again, she's 20, 22, 23 years old. She'll get there. She'll get there, you know.
So, yeah. Because they need her to go outside because Cardozo's the one that you're going to want inside posting up.
Yep, absolutely. So last thing that I had on my list, and like I said, Tony, if you want to add anything when we get to the end here, our two-time defending champion, Las Vegas Lynx, is it time to panic a little bit here? Since the Olympic break, they are 2-4. I think they're 18-12 overall. Last year, they only lost 6 games altogether in the regular season and only 1 game in the playoffs. So they're close to doubling their entire loss total from last season, and we've still got a chunk of the regular season left to go here. You know, they lost to the Lynx twice, which no shame in that. The Lynx are playing awfully, awfully well. But then last night, like in the aforementioned Asia Wilson 42-point explosion, they lose to, let's call it what it is, they lose to a pretty bad Dallas team. And I know Dallas has struggled with some injuries, but they're still, you know, Las Vegas should handle this, and they end up losing the game here. Is it time for Becky Hammon and the Aces to kind of be pushing that panic button a little bit?
I would say no. And the reason why I go that is I think they've shown, like when they first got Chelsea Gray back, they went a little bit of a streak there. Yeah. And they showed, hey, we're dangerous. And I think once they've kind of figured out that they're not going to get the top seed, mm-hmm. you know, that what they've kind of done is they've cut some minutes back on some players. They've messed around with some rotations, trying to develop their bench a little bit, knowing that, hey, Not that you want to sacrifice the regular season, but they might lose the battle to win the war, if you will, where they get ready for the playoffs, because they're going to have to go on the road. They're going to have to win some games on the road with being, you know, not the overall number one seed. But the one thing that worries me a little bit is Asia is playing out of this world. Like, yeah, she will probably be the unanimous MVP.
Yep.
But you've seen, like, Chelsea Gray, you know, I know she was hurt early, but she seems to have slid backwards. Kelsey Plum has some here and there, but she's not been overly consistent.
Yeah.
And so the pieces around Asia have been concerning. But the other thing, you know, once they kind of get their playoff legs under them, they didn't, you know, burn it up trying to go get the best record or anything like that. I think you'll see a team that'll be a dangerous team in the playoffs. But let's be honest, in the WNBA, it's more balanced than what it's been in a while.
Yes. Yeah, and I'm looking at the standings here. They're in fifth right now. They're, you know, if they can't, and it doesn't look like they're going to get to third. I mean, just the math. You know, I teach history, but they're 4 games back with 10 games left to go. It's going to be hard for them to get to that third spot where Minnesota is. So, you know, in that 4-5 spot, you're looking at, they got to play Seattle in the first round, right now, if the playoffs were to start today, you know, they're playing Seattle. If they beat Seattle, who's good, who just signed the Wiggins, like we talked about, they just signed Wiggins last week. They beat them, then they've got the Liberty. If they beat them, then they've got either probably Connecticut or Minnesota in the finals. That is a gauntlet to run.
It's a murderer's row.
That is a murderer's row. And so, you know, that's my concern as I look at them. It's just like, whew, you know, that those top three seeds are so vitally important to. And again, you know, Phoenix has got Griner and Taurasi. Indiana is, you know, they have been hot, almost like they have a fever.
That's good.
You know, a little Austin Powers for you there, you know.
Any cowbell?
No cowbell, no.
Okay.
I just want some sharks with some lasers. you know, but Indiana's playing well, you know, and you know, even, you know, like you said, you know, Chicago beat Las Vegas, and they probably should have beat them again. It took that miracle sideline out of bounds play that Becky Hammon drew up. Yeah, great set that she got Asia the... And executed well. The players did a great job of executing. Obviously, you got to give them credit, the most credit, because they're the ones that went out and did it. But you know, it's just it looks like, you know, for a variety of different reasons, you know, the 2 or 3 year big run that Las Vegas has been on right now. I mean, you know, if you were in Vegas and you were wagering a bet on them, I don't know if I could pick them right now, Tony. I just think that there's just a lot of things stacked up against them that are going to make a run to a third straight championship very, very difficult.
Yeah, I'm not saying I would pick them to win, but I wouldn't panic. You know, it kind of reminds me of seasoned NBA teams that realize, hey, we're okay. We're going to get 82 games, and I get the WNBA season's not 82 games, but you got a number of games. We're not going to run our legs off. We're going to play for the real season, which is the postseason. And, you know, don't ever underestimate the heart of a champion. I think that was Rudy T that said that. So, but no, I would not put money on them to win it. Their gauntlet is too much. But they'll give you a go. I wouldn't overlook them.
No, definitely not overlook them, but... Boy, that's going to be a tough mountain to climb 3 times in a row. It as will be. So, episode number 98, how to be a respected teammate. A lot of good stuff here, Tony. Any closing thoughts from you, my friend?
I think that golden rule that you mentioned, treat others how you want to be treated. I think that's a great, great piece of advice as far as how to be a great teammate.
Yep. Hope you folks enjoy this. A lot of great things coming from a pen and a napkin here. Again, we got the coaches retreat, October 12th and 13th, Kings of Their Court coming out here very, very soon. It's getting close to a month till it'll be released to the world here, and really excited to share that. So a lot of great things. So keep an eye out for all of that stuff and keep listening to the pods, you know, It's great doing this. Tony and I have episode number 100 closing quick. We put a little something out on social media. We kind of want to try to do a little mailbag thing for episode number 100. So if there's some stuff that you have for us, some questions, whatever it may be, let's have some fun with it. You know, we try not to take ourselves too seriously. This podcast was supposed to be done 15 minutes ago, but because both of us are have the maturity level of about a seven-year-old, we were giggling and farting around. So we want to have some fun with episode number 100. But in the meantime, we really hope that you took a lot of really good things from episode number 98. So, coaches, as always, let's be sure to hone our craft one day at a time.